Hello and welcome to recording number 2 of Gary Gygax's Knight Errant, an annotated reading. Today is October 13th, 2021. We're having some technical problems tonight, so hopefully this will record. All right, now we've gone through our first recording, and in this story, we are reading of Darkness, and it is a tale about Castle Greyhawk, ruins beneath. So the character, Enver Zig, has enlisted Gordon Chert to accompany him on an adventure into the depths of Castle Greyhawk. Now, this story, Castle Greyhawk has been looted many times, and Gordon Chert themselves have gone down to check it out. And they haven't found anything too worthwhile or rewarding. Enver Zig says he knows of areas that have not been looked into. And immediately, after they descend down into the depths of Castle Greyhawk, Enver Zig shows them a secret door, and they follow another passage down, and they find a pool and a set of iron doors and a secret door. And that is about where I left off last time, just on page 18 of Knight Errant. And there's not much more. I'm going to restore right here. Actually, I'm going to restart on page 17. The second paragraph from the end. They came to the bottom of this hidden shaft after climbing down feet, as far as Gord could reckon, altitude of their starting point. The young thief estimated that they must now be no less than 300 feet beneath the hilltop upon which the fortress was built, and possibly 50 feet beneath normal ground level. The place was chilly and damp. Strange runes and symbols covered the granite walls. Water dripped into a shallow pool that dominated the center of the place, and slight trickles ran down the walls and added to the dark liquid. Again, as it was obvious, a pair of rusted iron doors were set in the solid rock. "What now?" Gord asked the wizard. "Ignore those," Zig said, nodding toward the iron doors. "The master of this place put many distractions and diversions throughout his playground. Look for a mark of some strange sort on the stone floor circling the pool," he commanded. Gord, Chert, and Zig circled the pool several times, eyes intent on discovering some sort of marking, though none of the three knew exactly what form that would take. "I'm getting dizzy," Chert said after his fifth lap round the pool. "Keep still and keep looking." Gord stopped so suddenly that the clumsy barbarian, following close on his friend's heels, was not able to halt in time to avoid a collision. Gord, who was promptly knocked off his feet, donned a wry expression and stared up at a sheepish-looking Chert. "Ish, Gord, what are you doing down there?" the lumbering barbarian asked innocently. "I wanted to get a better, closer look, Chert," Gord said in a patronizing tone. He waved aside the hand Chert offered in assistance and pushed himself away from the ground. Halfway up, the observant gave a low whistle, crouched back down. "I think I see what we're looking for," he said softly to the wizard, indicating a faint scribing on the stone floor. Brushing past the dumbfounded barbarian, Enver Zig came to where Gord crouched. "Aha, that is the mark I sought," the spellcaster concurred when Gord pointed to the etchings on the ground. The wizard went immediately to the bare wall of the shaft and began searching there for a matching rune chiseled into the stone. Gord and Chert followed his lead, both of them amazed at the various signs, symbols, and runes covering the wall. All right. So, I'm breaking right here. We've gotten a little bit of information That's worth commenting on. And this was mentioned yesterday, but definitely we have the height now. Gord and Chirp have gone up and descended, and then here when they go down the second shaft, the secret passage down, Gord says that they've descended about 300 feet. It makes the hill on top which Castle Greyhawk sits about 250 feet up, and Gord feels that the 300-foot descent brings them down probably 50 feet into the earth. That would be at the level of the bottom of the hill. All right, so
would that be sea level, or would it be like the Skeleton level, or?
I don't know. You know, now, they said earlier that Gygax's version here, you can see Castle Greyhawk from anywhere within the city. So there are places that are raised and places lower. So basically, it's up on a hill, but we don't know. There's a set hill that is just for the castle, but we don't know how much of a rise there is to get to it. All that Gygax was saying here was that the area around the castle for about a mile, very wild, and the track to it was overgrown, and that north of it is marshy areas. Now, it would seem if to the north there's a marshy area, that anything delving deep into the earth would have to be protected from leakage and water. We get a little of the idea that this is damp. The rusted iron doors, the pool full of water, I believe there's like a drip. Its place was chilly and damp. All right, so water dripped into a shallow pool, and slight trickles ran down the walls. So there is a sense that you are now below the water level right here. In this area, it is described, there are runes and strange symbols carved into the granite walls. Now, I don't believe that is mentioned as being something that we see in general run of the dungeon that's been explored. I don't have much information. All right, then we get a little comedy routine with Gordon.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I know. That was actually amusing. And, you know, the bumbling, riding church, the bumbling barbarian.
Yeah, it doesn't seem forced. I mean, I think at least it made me laugh.
Oh, no, I think that worked. I think that was fine. I think that little bit of humor worked very similar in a way to the bit of humor with Ragworm and Evely. And Gord cutting its head off, and then Evely turning around and not noticing.
She's like, "Hey, what are you doing?"
yeah. So, I think that was nice, and it makes this story a little more lighthearted. This short story.
I also thought it was pretty cool. I mean, you didn't get to it yet, but it was Gord the thief who found the symbols. Identified like the quest or like whatever Zig was looking for.
Yes, and but you know, of course, Gord is very observant, has a lot of good stats, but there does seem to be a touch of you know, we don't know. The Enver Zig is made up to look like a typical wizard with the cockle hat, moons and stars and sequins over his robes and his hat. He's got a pair of daggers thrust into his belt and a case for a wand. He seems to be very much the wizard from the front of the Holmes Basic set. And or even the symbol of the TSR wizard after they left the lizard logo. So Enver Zay seems to be really pushed forward as you look at him, and he's obviously a wizard. But we don't know how skilled he is. And obviously going pretty deep down into Castle Greyhawk here.
He was able to cast that pass-through stone spell on, like, three people.
Oh, all right.
Right, didn't they sink or something?
I don't think they've done that yet.
Oh, gosh. Maybe I'm jumping ahead. Sorry.
Then we may have read it last time. I jumped back quite a bit. In fact,
I think we just touched on the very beginning of it.
Right. All right. So I'm going to restart. It's page 19. And it's the second paragraph down from the top. Gordon Chirk followed his lead, both of them amazed at the various signs, symbols, and runes covering the wall. "It is here, just as I thought," the wizard exclaimed excitedly. "Quickly now, both of you. Stand in the pool, and I will join you momentarily." "Are you keeping track of all this?" Gordon Chirk whispered to his friend. "Yeah, for what it's worth, I am, Chirk. But you had better try to remember a few things, too." The wizard was casting some sort of spell. He wasn't able to fathom what the Diomer was, but after making several passes in the air and uttering some tongue-twisting syllables, Herzig wrapped the wall with a small silver rod, turned, and dashed into the pool. The spray from his hurried entry wetting both adventurers as they stood in the ankle-deep water. "Now we're going to drown," Chirk cried as he noticed that the water had suddenly started to rise rapidly. Or were they sinking? The water now covered his chest. "Happening, Zig?" the young thief demanded hysterically, as Chirk continued to emit a few loud complaints of his own. "Quiet," the wizard hissed. "Don't distract me. We're merely sinking through stone." "Hold your breath now," the fellow added hastily, for Gord's head was about to sink under the surface of the pool. Right, so there we have it. Now we reached that yesterday, so, you know, it's no surprise that, you know, I even mentioned that, I think, yesterday, because I really took back that okay. Anniversary, he's got something with that silver rod, and to activate something, and then he needs to be keep his concentration for the passing through the stone. So, like you said, that's either an area effect spell, or else he has some kind of device, or there's some kind of device set into the stone activated, but he still needs to keep his concentration for them to do it. So implies kind of that he's cast the spell. Definitely something that Gord or Chirk are going to be able to emulate if they need to get out of here.
Yeah, I don't think they've thought of that yet.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, that is, of course, something you get into. It's like you better keep the wizard alive because he's the only one who can get us out of here. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page 19 and the last paragraph. The sensation was strange indeed. Gord felt as if he were standing on firm ground, and at the same time the pit of his stomach told him he was falling. The cold water touched his neck, moved upward to bathe his face, his head tingled, and then there was a brown-gray darkness all around. He kept holding his breath until his lungs felt as if they would burst. Suddenly the weird darkness was replaced by a normal blackness. Having his enchanted sword in hand, Gord was able to see in spite of the darkness. Chirk and Enver Zig were beside him, standing with their backs to a smooth granite wall, facing a chamber with several passages leading from it. Right. All right, now, Gord still has his short sword. He still thinks that the short sword is what is aiding his sight in the darkness. Now, he hasn't been attuned to that ring yet, because that happens when he goes back to the Cat Lord again after he's been killed in Artifact of Evil. So, you know, like, the Gygax has brought us back to the point where Gord was still relying on that enchanted sword, which I'm pretty sure that sword lasts him up until the time it gets destroyed in Sea of Death by the acidic content of the slug that he cuts into. And it destroys a massively enchanted sword. Now, we also have a little description here of the area where they're standing, their backs to a smooth granite wall, facing a chamber with several passages leading from it. So beneath that pool is an open passage. And it makes me wonder about, again, if that was Enver Zig casting, the ability to pass through the stone, or activating something that Zagig had perhaps left there. Because here, there's definitely a passage down. But, you know, sealed off by that, the bottom of the pool. All right, it is page 20, second paragraph down. I'm going to continue right here. That wasn't so difficult, the wizard said under his breath, seemingly impressed with his own magical prowess. Enver Zig calmly reached over and touched the lantern that Chert held in his left hand. It had been extinguished by their passage through water and stone, but as the wizard laid his hand upon the thing, flame sputtered and sprang to life from its wick. "There, now we can all see," he said. "Now that we can see, there's something I'd like to hear. The big question is, pal, do you know how to reverse the Deomer so we can return when we won?" Gord's voice reflected his skepticism. "Good thinking, Gord. Just how do we leave this place?" Chert echoed his friend's question. Break. Now, this is the old Gygax. This is where, I end up, asking a question, and Gygax answers it a couple paragraphs later. And sadly missing from Sea of Death was this awareness of what he was writing and how the reader would, be missing these things. Now, it may be part of his planned style of writing, but it really was missing in Sea of Death. There were several occurrences that needed explanation that were never offered. And it ended up, instead of being an interesting little encounter, some of the Sea of Death things were kind of examples of poor writing. All right, I'm going to restart. And it is page 20 and the fourth paragraph from the end. "We'll worry about that later," Enver Zig answered, obviously annoyed. "It will be merely a matter of discovering the route upward and taking it." "Discovering? What makes you so certain that there is a way out of this pit? We could be trapped here forever." Gord was becoming uneasy, to say the least. "Nonsense, thief. Haven't you learned to rely upon my ability yet? The same tome that enabled me to penetrate this place also mentioned a means of egress." "Tell us both now," Gord demanded, his tone menacing. "If something should befall you, wizard, we too would be left lost and helpless. Share your information immediately." "Yeah, you wizzo weasel," Chert added, backing the magician into the cold granite wall. "Tell us how to get out of here, now." Enver ignored the threat. He pointed at each of the exits in turn, counting from left to right. 9, as there should be. We must follow the passage beyond the fifth arch. Chert continued to press the wizard against the wall. "We're not going anywhere till you tell us how to get out of here," he said, the words dripping with acid. "You two here are here to assure my success. If I die, you have failed, so you will then deserve to die too. No, thief and barbarian, you shall have no share of my information. Guard me well, or we will all die here beneath Castle Greyhawk." "Shit, I figured something like this would happen. Grab the blaster, Gord, and I'll make him tell us." Gord was tempted, for the huge barbarian just might be able to twist and pommel the information from Enver Zig. Wisdom was there to prevent the action, however. Wait, Chert, this isn't the time or place to squabble. What if Zig manages to attack us with magic? What if he won't tell us, no matter what we do to try to make him talk? Then we'll have an out-of-commission magic user, and still no means of escape. We're in a lose-lose situation. Then, turning to the gaunt wizard, Gord said, "You have us as well you know. But hear this, you sorry sorcerer. Although we have no choice but to go along now, we're no longer your allies." Enver Zig stared at the young adventurers for a moment. Seeing the truth of Gord's words written in the faces of both men. "Oh, don't worry, Zig," Gwarian, a hefty shove, and walking away from the two angry comrades. "Not so, old demon crafter," Chert growled, reaching out and grabbing the wizard as he attempted to walk away. The furious Hillman slammed Enver Zig hard against the wall and pressed his face into that of his captive. "We agreed to share, not serve, and sharing goes for the information as well. Treasure. Your refusal to tell us what you know about leaving this hole breaks our agreement." He loosened his hold on the spellcaster and backed off a pace. Zig smoothed the wrinkles out of his mussed-up robe and straightened his crooked hat. "Bah, stop babbling and yapping about escape. I'll deal with you both if you try to back out. But that isn't likely to occur anytime soon. If we stand here much longer making such a racket, we're sure to bring unwanted and hungry visitors, and there's a certainty. Now proceed through that portal there." Gord motioned for his comrade to wait, and the young thief slipped silently ahead, disappearing into the dark tunnel with a wave to indicate the two should follow him. By his action, Gord was about 40 or 50 feet ahead of the barbarian and the wizard. The pale light of the lantern behind did not interfere with the magical vision that his sword bestowed upon him, so Gord was now able to see well ahead into the corridor. It was a hewn passage about 15 feet wide, vaulted above, and with a smooth floor and downward slope. The young thief estimated that for every 10 feet of its length, the tunnel slanted down about a foot. Strange clumps of vegetable stuff grew here and there on the walls. His sight showed the growth in a pale, bluish radiation. Light given off by the matter, Gord took care to avoid the strange growths as he stole ahead. All right, break. So we've got an unidentified glowing vegetable growth on a wall. We don't know if it's a help or hindrance or nothing more than a little bit of flavor text. We have a description here of them moving through the fifth or central portal and moving ahead. The Enver Zig seems to be, particularly trying to, get the Chert and Gord angry. So it either speaks to the arrogance of the character, and or the stupidity, and knowing Gygax, His evil characters tend to be appallingly, you know, petty and stupid and childish. So we could be looking at Enver Zig as an evil character here. All right, I am going to restart. It is page 23, and it is a second paragraph down from the top. After a time, he picked up the pace. The passage ran on ahead without turn, without added. Ford decided that scouting well ahead was better, and after informing Chert and Enver as to his intentions, he left his two companions far behind. He had gone perhaps a quarter of a mile when he saw a cavern ahead. By lying flat on the floor of the passageway, Ford could peer along its downslope and see this strange place, if only in glimpses. First, there was a sheet of reddish light playing throughout the place. Fire, he guessed. It winked out in an instant, only to be replaced by a deep green light that shimmered and wavered. What that was, he couldn't tell. That, too, was transformed momentarily, and billowing vapors of pearly gray took the place of the glowing green. The opalescent whiteness vanished, and blackness seemed to cover the cavern. One last look, however, revealed that the blackness was striated by bands of gray-brown and similar somber issues. Ochre, umber, terracotta, dun. Now, what in the nine hells is all that? Gord asked aloud, as he stood and ran back up the passage. As he did so, the yellow glow of the lantern shined ahead. Chert and Zig were approaching. What brings you back at such a pace, thief? The wizard asked, a worried frown playing across his chest. Across his face. Chert, be ready. There's something strange ahead. I think it's dangerous too, wizard. Yes, and it's commented that the mage needs a homunculus to fit his personality. And that always was, I loved that, the old homunculus illustration sitting by the back of the caster who shown in profile and casting the spell. Now, we have again the fifth passage. It's carved out of hewn stone. It's going ahead straight without turn, no additions. And then ahead gored. It's also descending at a slow pace. I believe it's a foot every 7 feet, every 10 feet?
Yeah, I think it's 10.
Or every 10 feet. It's going down a foot, and Gord's following it, and then he comes to this light. And it is, first there's a fiery sheet, and then there's that he thinks fire, and then green, and then white, opalescent light. And he immediately thinks he retreats from it because it's an unknown. So he's not sure if it's dangerous or not. But I think his senses are telling him he thinks it's dangerous. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page 24. And the second paragraph down from the top. At that, the spell worker immediately began digging into the front of his robe. He drew forth a small tube of parchment, unrolled it, and scanned the writing thereon for several seconds before he spoke. This is the first of the challenges which we must overcome. I believe that it is a matter which I can handle well enough. But both of you be ready with your weapons, just in case. What nature is this so-called challenge, Zig? Enver Zig gave a harsh, chop-short bark that might have been a laugh. You are apt with your words, thief, saying no more. The wizard brushed past the two adventurers and strode purposefully ahead, a crystal-tipped ivory wand in his left hand, and his right hand thrust into a pouch attached to his girdle. Short took several long strides and was even with the wizard. Shortening his steps then, the giant hillman kept level with Zig on his right, while Gord paced along at his left. Like it or not, they had to ward this man, for he was their only means of eventually leaving this strange underworld. Holding his huge axe in one hand, Chert swung it back and forth to loosen his muscles and prepare for possible combat. Brule's curved head glittered, and a buzzing sound issued from the weapon as it cut through the air. The barbarian grinned too, grinned at that, for the hum reassured him. Gord too was prepared to fight, his dagger now in his left hand to serve as main gauche to the short sword to he plied. "That's what I like," Enver Zig said without glancing aside at either of them. Staunch henchmen ready to defend their master. "Fight it," Zig Church said with a growl. Gord didn't bother to respond, time enough later to settle accounts with this arrogant spell worker. There was a problem at hand that needed all of their attention. "Again, Zig, what lies ahead?" Before the wizard got round to replying, if he ever intended to do so, the three were at the mouth of the cavern. The fiery sheet of stuff that filled the great spaces was replaced by the translucent emerald shimmer. Now Gord could see that it appeared to be water. How it was held within the cavern and did not come rushing along the tunnel they stood in, the young adventurer had no idea. The green-hued liquid remained for a minute, then it was replaced by swirling clouds and streaks of empty clear blue space. This, too, persisted for but a moment, and then it gave way to the gloom of earth-tone bands, just as Gord had witnessed earlier. Now the wizard spoke. "You see, you were aware of the challenge all along, thief. You asked and answered your own query. Didn't you? The nature of this place is just that. The elements which combine to form nature. Do we burn, drown, fall, or suffocate?" said Gord. "Do we burn, drown, fall, or suffocate?" Chert asked angrily, as the flames again sprang into being before them. Silence, Enver Zig watched the play of the fire, counting under his breath as he did so. As the burning wall of fire paled almost undetectably, the gaunt Democrafter acted. "Be subject to water," he cried loudly. The deep green came into being instantly. "Be bound by air," as the command rang out. The water disappeared, and the cloudy pearly hue replaced the green. "Be balanced by earth." Now the dark striated mass filled the cavern. Enver Zig shouted more loudly still when the dark earth-like stuff appeared. Be combined with all, he boomed. Suddenly, instead of a cavern buried hundreds of feet underground, the two startled young men saw a sweeping vista before them. Green hills stretched away into the distance. In their folds were copses of trees, a winding brook, and a large pond. The vault of the sky above was dotted with fluffy white clouds. A small cottage stood in the corner. Stood in the center of a meadow before them, its chimney issuing a thin plume of bluish smoke. Insects hummed, birds sang, and what appeared to be wild cattle, aurochs, grazed on a distant ridge. "Now that's magic," Chert exclaimed. "Let's get out of here and head for home." Right, so it looks like, some kind of portal has been opened up. And so again, we're moving through these magical means, because obviously it's doubtful that any of this vast vista exists underneath Castle Greyhawk, but that there may be a portal from that point to a different place. And that does fit with prior knowledge of what the Castle Greyhawk campaign was like. All right. It's page 26, and I'm going to restart on the third paragraph down from the top. Enver Zig laughed his barking laugh derisively. We'll get out of this passageway, all right, and we'll visit the home before us, too. Before more than that, my hulking barbarian, I will not entertain. All right. I will not promise. Sorry, I've got a little hard time reading tonight. All right, soon they were standing before the door of the cottage. From its dim interior stepped a tall, muscular man. His white garments, staff, and adornment showed him to be a druid of some sort, Gord thought. The man looked at them with his bright, commanding brown eyes. "What seek you here?" The element master, Enver Zig, said with a tinge of uncertainty discernible in his voice. "You have found him, little wizard. Now what do you wish of me?" "We will pass through your domain." "Will you face the heat of my fire, then?" "No, we demand another challenge." "Very well," the tall man said smoothly. "Water it shall be." "No." Now the element master frowned as if he were annoyed at this second contradiction. "You are a difficult one, Bushy Brows. Nevertheless, I offer the trial of air to you and your associates." Enver Zig had regained his full confidence. "Not so. We decline air as well." Scowling at them, the white-garbed element master called back, "Then only earth is left to you." "Do not deceive us, master of the elements," the wizard countered yet again. "We decline earth, for I am aware there is a fifth challenge, one you use and were..." "One you are not required to mention. We call for nature." This caused the tall man to shake his fist angrily at Enver Zig. "For one so limited in the arts, wizard, you are well versed in certain lore. Take the niggling trial, then, rather than the heroic ones I presented." "We accept," said the Spellbinder. The element master gestured, and a huge bull Orox came thundering toward them. The burly hillman must best the bull. A second wave, and a monstrous reptile slithered forth from a clump of brush nearby. The quick little thief must best this snake. Finally, a third pass, and a dark shadow covered them. "Wizard, you will defeat the rock that plummets upon you even now, or your bones will nourish my soil." As he concluded, the element master turned as if to walk away, but then swung to face the trio. "Oh, one minor detail I forgot to add." A broad grin played across his face as he continued. "One of you may not help a companion until you have defeated your own challenge. Then and only then may you come to the aid of a comrade. If this rule is broken, all three of you will die instantly." The element master issued a loud, cruel laugh, and he and his cottage vanished. All right, break right there. So we're introduced to this element master, and this is, from what I've heard, is a very typical kind of encounter, you know, in the depths of Castle Greyhawk. I believe the early days were much more treasure and monster, but also traps. But later on, the dungeon became more and more exotic, with passages that led to Alice in Wonderland, China, England. We even had Rob Kuntz's Bottle City that eventually appears. Now, Chris has put up the front cover, and there we see Enver Zig in his very classically wizardly robes and hat, using a wand to strike out at a rock. That appears much more like giant vulture than I think a rock normally does get described. And this business of challenges and trials is an iconic part of Gygax's design of Castle Greyhawk. And it is mentioned here in a question. We get the idea that trials are a part of the Gygax dungeon crawls. And this, there's no more famous than the Castle Greyhawk crawl right here. I think what we're seeing here are actually fictionalized accounts of pieces of the dungeon that you would have encountered in Gygax's home game, especially before he really had built up and started to do more of the traditional published version of Greyhawk. But even so, that was a pretty wild game that he ran, and not really bound by, you know, a number of things. So here the element master, he's offering, you know, earth, wind, the normal elements. But Enver Zig, with his knowledge, is able to choose a fifth. And according to the element master, he feels this is nowhere near the challenge that should be faced. So Chert is going to take on an Orox bull. Orox bulls are these ancient, huge creatures, much bigger than a normal bull. And Gord is going to deal with a snake. All right, and here the wizard is going to end up dealing with a rock. And the rock is supposed to be a monstrously big creature. So, you know, quite the encounter here. And, yeah, and Zig chose to be a jerk here, so... He gets the test that is most appropriate to him. All right, now we are given the rule that they can't aid each other until they've defeated their personal test. So if Gord beats the snake, he can aid someone else. So hopefully, you know, one of them is going to succeed right away. I'm going to restart. It's page 27 and the second paragraph from the end. The terrain seemed to shift and flow, and all three men found themselves within a large bowl, a natural amphitheater with cliffs forming a barrier around its half-mile diameter. "Let's get this over with," Chert exclaimed excitedly as he turned to face his opponent. Axe raised high, the hillman shouted a battle cry and ran forward to meet the bull's charge. Chert thought the battle with the wild aurochs would be a fairly easy matter until he saw the true size of the bull. From a distance, it had appeared to be of normal size, but close up, there was no question that the beast was monstrous. The creature was fully as tall as the fully as tall at the shoulder as the barbarian, and its head was armed with wickedly pointed horns that appeared to be at least 4 feet long. "If this is niggling, I'd hate to see the other challenges we were offered," the disheartened barbarian marveled. Meanwhile, Gord did his best to avoid the snake that threatened him. It was a giant cobra. Its hood spread and its fangs dripping venom. The monster reared back, its head poised for a fraction of a second. Then it shot forward. The young thief detected the attack at about the same instant it occurred and quickly did a backflip to avoid the strike. A glob of poison the cobra spat barely missed its mark, a fact that Gord found somewhat disconcerting, to say the least. Circling, the two opponents began a game of cat and mouse, although it wasn't apparent who or what was which, since the snake was not eager to expose itself to the young man's two blades. If Chert and Gord thought they were having a difficult time of it, they should have been in Enver Zig's robes. The wizard was beginning to wonder if he would live to see the completion of this challenge, let alone the completion of his quest. The great bird had him pinned to the ground with a single mighty talon, the horny claws of 1 foot caged the wizard as the rock sought to use its deadly beak to snap him in two. Enver darted and flapped, too busy avoiding talons and snapping beak to cast a spell, but able to send forth a dot of energy. Now and again from his small wand, the crackling streak of power that issued from a crystal-tipped wand was aimed always at the terrible rock's massive face. Massive beak. Each time the creature was struck by a little bolt of energy, it squawked in pain. The sound was ear-splitting because of the bird's massive size, and the effect seemed to make the rock redouble its efforts to devour the wizard. As the aurochs thundered down upon him, Chert managed to sidestep one of the great horns that was aimed right at the barbarian's belly. As the beast bellowed and screeched past its intended victim, Chert brought his massive blade down upon the animal's shoulder. Gruul bit deep, But the shaft was ripped from Chert's grasp as the bull quickly skidded into a perfectly executed turn. Blood streamed down the animal's side, and this anger, and this same sanguine hue lit its eyes as it came back with a look of vengeance, the likes of which Chert had never seen before in man or beast. All the huge hillman could do was grapple with the monster. Yelling like a madman, Chert ran directly at the bull, grabbed one of the massive horns and twisted, but he wasn't quite quick enough, and his leverage was off. The aurochs tossed its head, and its thickly muscled neck shot up and back. The barbarian sailed through the air and landed with a thump. 20 feet behind the enraged beast, the bull spun, brought its forward curving horns parallel to the butt. The bull spun, brought its forward curving horns parallel to the turn, and trotted ahead, horns parting the low grass as it came. Chert was on his feet instantly, and he did the only thing left to do. He ran in the opposite direction. The bull's head shot up at that, and it quickened its pace to a lumbering, deceptively rapid run. The distance between man and animal narrowed rapidly. The monster's hot breath was beginning to warm Chert's back when the barbarian threw himself to one side, crouched and rolled. One hooking horn gouged a bloody groove across his calf, but he was otherwise unhurt. Somehow Chert managed to regain his feet quickly, a difficult act for the clumsy barbarian. He immediately sprang after the bull, keeping to the flank in which the axe was still embedded. Chert began a game with the animal. All right, break. I'm interested here, not so much in the combat. The description of Chert as a clumsy barbarian is now repeated. We had a little bit of it done humorously at the beginning, where Chert runs into Gord, who stops suddenly, and again he's referred to as clumsy and lumbering, and here he's referred to as clumsy. And I don't believe that was ever an appellation that really applied to Chert. I think Chert was always supposed to be relatively dexterous. Now, I'm wondering, if we look back at Saga of Old City, we might actually get to see the statistics for Chert. But I'm wondering if the barbarian class has a dexterity requirement, but I'm not sure.
It's fairly high.
Yeah, so I just don't see Chert I'm struck by Gygax the second time, reinforcing the idea that somehow Chert is clumsy, and definitely not the impression that is given in Artifact of Evil.
Yeah, he wasn't presented as an oaf before this.
No, and he's also being presented as, I think his intelligence is a lot lower in this. I think the oaf factor is up in this too, where Chert is, it's not even a question of education. They're kind of showing Chert as big and strong, but clumsy and not as intelligent. And I don't know. I didn't get that impression. Now, it is unfortunate how high the attributes are for Gord. And maybe Gygax is taking a step back with Chert to show that he isn't like a real, you know, super, super powerful character. But definitely, you know, what he did. And so Chris has posted here The barbarian class, many skills, tough, hardy, recovering quickly from strength and a dexterity of 14 or better, a wisdom of no less than 16. Wow. Wow. So not necessarily the intelligence needs to be high, but boy, the dexterity of 14 or better, once you get into that level, I mean, you know, it's Chert would be exceptionally dexterous for a normal person. He's not going to be getting at 14 the bonuses for missile combat, but he may have a greater dexterity. And Gygax at this point is still using, I believe, AD&D as his baseline for understanding how people fight and act, and their reactions, and their statistics, their ability scores. And so far, I think that Gygax has changed Chert's character abilities, his attributes, and his, so his intelligence and dexterity seem to be being put out as low. All right. We got a little time left. I'm going to continue reading. It's page 30, second paragraph down from the top. The cobra was readying itself to spit again. Desperately, Gord took aim and hurled his long dagger, but the monstrous reptile weaved its head at that moment, so the blade failed to take it full on its gaping mouth. Instead, the dagger's edge passed along the snake's skull, not piercing it, but slicing the thing's eye. Hissing in pain, the cobra struck, knowing that being blind on one side would assure its death. Gord was nearly taken by the sudden attack, for he had been poised to counter a venomous missile when the strike came instead. He managed to bat the cobra's head aside with the flat of his sword, then darted ahead among the huge reptile's coils. Once, twice, the short sword slashed. Then Gord was beyond the writhing body. The cobra slithered so as to come at him again, and Gord decided that he had to get to close quarters quickly. He leaped to attack again, blade pointed ahead. The cobra reared higher, pulling its head back. Gord was on its blind side now, and wasting no time, he jumped at the opportunity to finish the creature. Gord's blade struck upward. The tip went through the cobra's lower jaw from below, pierced its mouth, sliced its brain, and protruded from the reptile's thick skull in one smooth plunge. The snake thrashed in its death throes, and Gord, utterly exhausted, stood by and watched till it died. Then he wasted no time in rushing to his friend's aid. All right, break right there. So Gord has this long-toothed dagger that was mentioned much earlier on. And it can pierce through most things, most metals, metal armor and such. So in this, he's describing how easily and smoothly it pierces up through the bottom of the snake's mouth, right up through its palate and into its, through its brain and out its skull. So Gord's making good use of his long-toothed dagger. All right. The contest is still going on, but Gord, now having defeated his foe, should be able to go and help help Chert. I don't know how much this kind of challenge is appealing to players. It doesn't really appeal to me. So I don't know how useful, but it is an example of certainly the style of play that was favored by Gygax and in Castle Greyhawk. They're transported. They're in a different, either an illusion or transported to a different plane or to a different part of Earth. The action seemed to suggest that it is a different plane. The ground itself seems to weave, you know, it, and they change from the meadow where they're bowl.
Get it all the time.
Round bowl. Yeah, I mean, this is in a sense better, but again, it is a very, you know, it's an unrealistic, surreal contest. There, it reminds me. It reminds me of several shows that we have seen: Star Trek, the original series, some stuff from Doctor Who. There was particularly a Patrick Troughton Second Doctor episode where he fought in Storyland, where you know, these challenges kept appearing, and they were very surreal challenges that didn't make much sense. And we ran into a very humorous Star Trek episode where they face these challenges because they don't realize they're on this super advanced world that creates entertainment for them, so that their challenges, that their fights aren't deadly. Even if they're killed, they're repaired. I forgot what that one was called, but it was a very enjoyable one. And Kirk gets to beat up an old Academy bully that he always wanted to beat up. And there's samurai, and they get strafed. And there was a knight, in Knight Who Kills McCoy. And and I'm going to end for the night. Here, I'm getting carried on. All right, night, everyone.